Here we'll start the sixth parak, Hakones. Hakones tzon ledir. It's very interesting that the Mishnah here speaks about tzon. Until now, the Mishnayos had used the word shar. Shar is a more aggressive and belligerent animal in potential. Tzon is usually more docile. Vinal de Fanel Karoi. So he puts the sheep into a corral, some sort of fence. It's a fenced off area. And he locks it up. And that's Karoi. That's called Shmira Karoi. It's a fine Shmira. Viyotza Vizika.
But he got out.
The animal somehow got out. We don't know exactly how. That's going to be a variable that we have to fill in as we go along. No, it's despite the fact that he did a shmira karoi, the animal got out. Is pot. There's a very strange Rashi here at the beginning of the perek. Hakones, I want you to just think about this Rashi a little bit. We'll come back to discuss it Blined later. Hakones potur don natra. Natra means he watched it. And then Rashi adds four words, Umay Havile Lemevat.
So what else should he have done?
What else should he have done? Why is that Rashi very difficult, Harvey? What question should you ask on this Rashi?
But he did look after it properly.
But could he have done more? Do you remember what level of Shmira we're talking about here? I don't know if you got to get through the sugya. So alright, so let's go through the sugya. Just think about this Rashi, this Mayhavi Lehmevat. It's not a Poshet Rashi at all. Alright, let's go on in the mission. Lo nal befanel karoi. If he did not provide adequate Shmira, v'yotza v'zika chayim. I mean, I would say that this part of the Mishnah is superfluous, but the Mishnah sometimes gives you the opposite. It tells you when you're potter and then the flip side when you're chayv. I don't see any chidush in this part of the Mishnah. Fine. Oh, this is Ari from Silver Spring. That's Dr. Alan Kermeyer. We've been hoping to make that introduction for about an hour or two, but
okay.
I guess we'll mix messages about when you were coming. You want to take this and put this on the bottom? So Ari, if you have any flexibility, you know, after the shiur, maybe make up with Alan.
Okay.
Do you know each other?
We do now.
Yeah. I thought you knew each other from Silver Spring.
What's your last name?
Elias Backrack.
Elias
Backrack.
Oh, Backrack.
Okay. So we go on now. And the Mishnah says, Nifritza Balaila. So until now, we've been saying that he provided the proper shmira, and the animal somehow got out. Let's assume, for argument's sake, that the animal dug its way under the fence. That's the ratio. And since he put up a fence, and he didn't have to anticipate this strange situation where the animal would burrow its way under the fence, therefore he's pot. Again, Rashi's very difficult. We'll come back to this. Rashi says, "My havi leila mefod." We don't understand that Rashi. The Gemara is going to say, "Yeah, he could have done a better shmira," but Rashi says, "My havi leila mefod." Now we have a case of nifritza. Now, what's nifritza? How is that different than the case I gave you before, where the animal burrows its way under the fence? What does nifritza mean? The fence is broken. No more fence. We could say, "Oh, it's shmira. The shmira is gone. It's history." So here the Mishnah wants to say, it depends. If it was nifritza bayom, again, the Mishnah, I'm reading a word into the Mishnah that doesn't appear. But if it was nifritza bayom, then he'd be chayef. Why? Because he has to replace the shmira. Shmira is only good as long as it's extant, you know, it's in existence. Once the shmira is history, like for example, the Gemara says back on the afternoon base, if you cover a bar, and then the covering of the bar becomes, you know, the subject of becomes victimized by the attack of termites. And the termites attack this piece of wood that you put over the bar until it's so weak that any animal will fall through, you know, by its weight will fall through the bar. So the Gemara says, in such a case, you're chayev. ask yourself the question, but wait a minute, he put a covering over the bar. Okay, he put a covering over the bar. The covering over the bar is history. It's gone. So that's the case of Nifritz of Hayom. You put up a fence, but the fence is gone. However, the Mishnah says Nifritz of Balayla. And in this case, the Mishnah is going to tell you that you're potter. Okay, I'm fast forwarding to the word potter. We'll come back. The Mishnah has another case, which is also included under Nifritza. But first, Nifritza Balayla. Obviously, there's a difference between day and night. What we're saying about a shmira that's gone, a shmira that dissolved or disintegrated, and therefore you have to replace it, that's only within a certain period of time. In other words, we can anticipate, we can expect of you that if your shmira is no longer viable, that within a certain period of time you should be replacing that shmira. But supposing you provided a very good shmira and the shmira is down, but it'll take you X amount of minutes or hours until you can replace the shmira, within that period of time you're still somehow covered by the first shmira. That shmira still covers you as the owner of the mazik. It doesn't cover the bar. Like, for example, if you take a look back on Nun Beis for a second, you'll see that Rabbi Yochanan on Daf Nun Beis, you see in the middle of the Daf there's a Mishnah. And after the Mishnah, if you take a look, the Gemara starts the three lines down. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, when is he chayav? Again, it's the case where the kisei habar was removed. Bichdeshi odiuhu, they have to notify him that the kisei is history. It's gone. It's disintegrated. It's been attacked by the termites. V'yiskar polim, now he has to hire workers to go out into the forest. V'yichros arazim, to cut down the wood. V'yichasenu, like there's a whole. The whole chain of events has to. First of all, he has to get the notification. Yeah, he's out at work, or he's on holiday. Nobody, they didn't have cell phones in those days, so he didn't know that. So finally, he finds out that the kisa is gone. That's number one. Number two, he's got to go out and hire workers, laborers to cut down trees. They cut down trees. That's number three. And then he covers the bar again. During that period of time, the interim until A, B, C, and D has been implemented, he's actually potter. He doesn't have to pay for damages if a shark falls into his bar. He dug a bar. So you're going to tell me, but he covered the bar. Yeah, but what happened to the covering over the bar? It's gone. So the answer is that he still somehow has the coverage, so to speak. I hate to use the word coverage because I'm talking about a covering over a bar. But he's covered by and protected by the original shmira. A similar thing happens now. He put up a fence around what? Around the tzon. The fence is down, which is called nifritza. So if we assume that he knows about the nifritza, let's say during the day, then he's immediately chayav to restructure the fence and provide a shmir that replaces the original shmir. But if it was nifritza balayla,
he wouldn't know.
He wouldn't know about it. Now Tosis throws in another possibility. Take a look at Tosis Dibri Avaskel Nifritza. Tosis says in his first answer he doesn't know about it, but in his second answer, Inami, that's three lines before the end of the Tosis, he says Balayla Filu no Dolosh Nifritza. You know, the alarm went off. V'yotza behema, and the animal goes out. Okay, we're going to have to spend a lot of time on those two words. V'yotza behema. This is an interesting twist. Tosa says that for him to run around through the streets and find his little shepsula in the middle of the night when it's pitch black, you know, that much is too much tircha to ask of him. So now we have another element. You know, it's not only the time factor and how long it takes him to replace the shmira, but there's also a tircha element, Tosa says, that plays a role over here. And again, in each case of Shmiras Nezikin, if the Shmira is gone, the question is, to what extent can we demand upon him in the middle of the night, you know, go out there with a whole crew of people and torches and, you know, try to find, you know, in the pitch black and the darkness, try to retrieve his animal and then bring it back into the corral and it's fenced off. You know, that's too much to ask of him. It's similar to the concept, Rabosa, you remember the concept we've discussed it on many occasions called Ones Rachmana Patri.
Right.
That sometimes the Torah exempts you or exonerates you from punishment or from liability because it would be too much to ask. It's already beyond human, human efforts. You know,
expectations.
Right, it's beyond our expectations to expect of a person that he would have to go to such an extent, put himself out in the middle of the night. Everybody likes to sleep during the night, right? We like to be staying in bed. It's the winter time, you know, we're under the covers, we're under the blankets. Who wants to go ahead and do such a thing? So, also, let me just, Alan, before you make your comment, I just want to summarize what we've seen until now. 3 points. Point number one is the Mishnah addresses the question of Shmirah with regard to Tzon, not with regard to a Shar. Shar was covered by previous Mishnahs. Now the Mishnah is covering the case of Tzon, a much more docile animal. And the Mishnah says that there's something called Shmirah Karoi. If he provides Shmirah Karoi, which the Mishnah identifies as Nal Defaneha, he's got something that fences off the Tzon, so it doesn't go out to damage, then he's Potter, because he's Nal Defaneha Karoi. Rashi adds a point here that my Havilei Lemevat, he couldn't have done any more. We're going to have problems with this, Rashi, as we go through the Sugya, because we're going to see that the Sugya says that Nal Defaneha Karoi is the most basic, you know, most basic level of Shmira. It's called Shmir Pchusa. You know, that sounds like a pejorative term, you know, just low-level Shmira. And in certain cases, not in the case of Tzon, the Torah is going to require a higher level of Shmira, which is called Shmira Me'ula. Point number two, the Mishnah then adds that if Nal Befaneh Karoi, he's Potter, but if Lo Nal Befaneh Karoi, then he's Chayev. Point number three, what about Nifritza? Nifritza means that the Shmira that he provided is gone. It's history.
But it was originally there.
Oh, so it depends. If we can somehow justify the fact that he hasn't replaced the original Shmira, then he's Potter. And that's going to be Nifritza Balayla, which is one of two things. Either the way Tosus interprets it, he didn't get the word because nobody called him up in the middle of the night. Or Tosus says it would be too much of a tircha for him to run around through the streets at night and find his animal. Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted, it seems to me that comparing it to what we learned earlier by Bor, that Bor B'shus HaRabim is a hezek that he created, and therefore he's not just trying to protect an animal, so to speak. He is responsible for having put a hezek there in the first place. Putting a covering on it potters him from it because, at least for a time being, he has nullified the hezek. But first of all, I'm not sure that's the kula alma, because it makes a difference whether you hold that putting a covering on a boar automatically potters you, period, or it only potters you as long as it's there, as opposed to if you filled in the boar. Once you filled in the boar,
right,
you finished.
So that's why I quote Rabbi Yochanan. You know, just again, we're not learning the Sugya bar today, but Rabbi Yochanan says that even though there's no shmira on your bar, so A, you created a bar,
right,
you had no right to do so, that's an illegitimate misuse of a misappropriation of Rishus HaRabim. Number two, the bar is dangerous. A person could fall in, a shark could fall in. Number three, although I admit you put a covering on the bar in Kal Kavod, that's great, but that covering is history. Says Rabbi Yochanan, we're going to still afford him with a period of time in which we can, reasonably, good, excellent, thank you. Harvey always comes in the clutch here. We can reasonably assume that within that period of time he could replace the shmir on the bar. I would have said, I'm not willing to wait that period of time. You stand there personally with a gun in your hand or whatever it is, you know, and make sure that any animal that, you don't want to kill an animal just because he's coming near your bar, but protect, you know, set up shomrim around the bar and make sure that an animal doesn't fall in. Who gave you right to dig that bar? More than that, I would have said, you have to guarantee yourself the kind of covering that would never be attacked by termites, you know, maybe put a steel or aluminum plate over the wood. No. Rav Yochanan says we can be very lenient. And that has to be understood why. But the point that I'm making is that the original Shmirah somehow still protects him. And where do I see that in our Mishnah? That the original Shmirah that he provided still protects him, even though the Shmirah is gone? Nifritz of Allah.
And when they say Belilah, they don't necessarily only mean Belilah, but if he's unaware of it during the daytime, that's Belilah.
So that depends on two answers of Tosus. In the first answer of Tosus, you're right, it depends on whether he's notified or he's not notified. So it's not a Din in Yom or Lila. You know, it's not like Allah of Kiddush Bayom as opposed to Kiddush Balilah. It's not Xeris HaKosim. But in the framework of the second Teretz of Tosus, to say that it's a tirk of him to run around and find the animal by day, that I wouldn't say. And therefore by day we assume that he knows, and therefore he has to go out and find his animal.
So Tosus would then say it was raining outside during the daytime, he would also be punter?
Maybe. I don't know. It's a good point. Now what's the other case of Nifritza, where he's potter? Is Partsua listed? Now, this is an interesting case because someone who illegitimately breaks down his Shmirah, on the one hand, I would say that the person who owns the animal and provided the Shmirah, he's not responsible for some other human being who deliberately breaks down the Shmirah. But on the other hand, at the same time, I might think that who should be chayav for this damage when this sheep goes out and eats up someone's vegetables? The listener should be chayav. The Mishnah says no. Potter. Now the word potter refers to whom? To the Baal. It doesn't refer to the listener. But the din is the same as far as the listener. How do I know such a thing? Because the next line in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says hotzi ua listim chayav. Only if the listim removed the animal from the deer, physically removed the animal, they schlepped the animal out, then and only then are the listim chayov. Partsua listim is listim pturim. In other words, we have now a kind of, I call it a no man's land. It's nishtaher and nishtahin. It's that law of excluded middle. What happened? Reuven owns a sheep. What's the singular of sheep?
Sheep.
Oh, he owns a sheep. Okay, a lamb. And Shimon breaks the fence that Reuven provided as Shmira to that sheep. But even though Shimon broke that fence, he did not remove the animal from its place. Levi's tomato patches get eaten up by the sheep. Levi comes knocking on the door of Reuven, pay me damages, you're liable. Reuven says, I provided Shmirah. Go knock on Shimon's door. Shimon broke down my Shmirah. Shimon says, I'm not chayav either. Why not? I didn't take the animal out, so what? You broke down the Shmirah. Is the answer apparently is that okay, you broke down the Shmirah, but that doesn't make you responsible. Why not? Because the halach is called Mamon HaMazik. Mamon HaMazik means that it's got to be mine, or alternatively, a shomer who's nichnas tachas habaylim, which the Gemara establishes means he accepts upon himself
Shmira.
The responsibility of Shmirah. But these listim are not interested in accepting upon themselves the chov shmirah. So in a negative sense, they break down the shmirah, but on the positive side, they don't accept upon themselves the responsibility to provide the shmirah. And they're potter. Until they become the replacement to the bialim. At what point in time do they become the replacement of the bialim?
When they take it out.
When they take it out. Hotziu listim chayov. Now the Gemara asks, the Mishnah asks the following question. Is it true that fencing off the animal is a good, reliable shmira? It depends. There may be situations where you put the animal in such a matzav that even though you provided shmira, that shmira is not sufficient. He nicha b'chama. You left the animal under the beating hot sun. The animal is desperate to get out. Your fence is not an adequate shmira, and therefore you're chayav. Oh, here's another case where just locking the fence is not sufficient. Masra lechere shotav katan v'yotzav izika chayav. In the case of a chere shotav katan, not only, says the Mishnah, would it be ridiculous to rely on them to provide shmira, but moreover, they even undermine shmira. And therefore, if the animal gets out because the Cheri Shelter decided we're in the mood to play with the animals, we want to play games here, we're going to open up the locked door, you're chayav for that. And again, all this is going to come up in the Sugya Bezer Hashem. Masol Roa, Roa, Nichnas Haro Tachtov, as we said before, the Shomer becomes the replacement with a Chiv Achrayus as far as Shmir is concerned. Nafla legina venenes. Now, until now, we haven't really entered into a discussion about how the hezek actually occurred. For example, if the animal went out, the animal stomps on peros and destroys them. That's called what?
Rega.
Alternatively, the animal goes out and eats this food. That's called shame. What's the difference between the two? In the case of regel, the hezek occurs to the object directly, and the object, now that it's been destroyed, has to be replaced. You can't replace the object, it's gone. That's called, in the language of the Shas, machalia karna, the object is gone. But what do we say? What's the liability of the owner of the animal in the case of regel? He's got to pay enough money to replace that object that was lost. He has full compensation, full liability. So we take the object, or a similar object, to the marketplace. We figure out, evaluate how much the buyer would be willing to pay. That's the exact sum of money which the Baal HaRegel will have to pay. But when we get to shame, the situation becomes more complicated. And instead of paying for the value of the object that was consumed by the animal, you pay the amount of hana, of benefit, that the owner of the animal gained. So let's say, for example, the owner of the animal feeds his sheep barley for supper every night. And barley costs 5. The animal decided to enjoy the good life and ate Yenim's tomato patches that cost 10. On the one hand, the tomato patches, from the perspective of the Nizak, is an absolute total loss of 10. From the perspective of the Mazik, on the other hand, what did he gain? What did he benefit? He could have fed the animal what?
Barley,
and he would have only spent 5. Now, admittedly, he's not going to feed the animal tonight. The animal's going to go to sleep without its due portion of barley because the animal is filled with tomatoes. But on the other hand, although he saved himself 5, he didn't save himself 10. He has a right to say to the Nizak, guess what? I'm going to pay you for that, not that I benefited, but that only comes to the total sum of 5 and not to 10. How do I know that this halacha, this very strange halacha, applies? We're being very lenient on the mazik. Because the Mishnah says, Nafla legino venenes, the animal, because its owner did not provide the proper shmira, the animal fell into a garden and has a blast over there, starts eating away at the fruits and vegetables, is mishalemes mashenenes. Rashi says mashenenes lefi hanaasa velo lefi hezeka. We're not going to evaluate the actual hezek from the perspective of the loss of the nizak, but rather the hana from the perspective of the gain and the benefit of the mazik. Why are we being so lenient on the mazik? I don't know. I would have said, let's hit him with the whole brunt of the law, hit him with the books, and let him pay Masha Hizik. After all, that's exactly what he's going to pay in the case of Regel, for sure in the case of Shar Karen, but somehow in the case of Shane, there's going to be a kula. Now, how far does this kula go to be lenient on the mazik? Take a look how far this goes. Ketzad mishalemes Masha Hizika. How much should he pay in this case? I'm sorry. Go back. I skipped the line. You guys were too nice to point it out to me. Okay. Yarda kidarka vihizika. If it destroys the peros, mishalemes mashi hizika. Ketzad mishalemes mashi hizika. Now we have another kula. Okay, this kula applies again. We have to know in what cases it applies. Here it says, Yarda Kedarka Vihizika. So what's Yarda Kedarka Vihizika? It didn't fall off the roof. So what's happening over here? In the case of Nafla Legina, apparently there's a leniency here, which I forgot to mention before, and the Mazik doesn't have to pay the full price of Hezek, right? The full price of Hezek. Why? Because Nafla Legina. Okay, that's the case of Nafla Legina.
But there was Shmira, wasn't there?
Yeah, take a look. Rashi says Nafla Legina, four lines down from the top, be honest. Migag Baila Hasomach Laginas Chaver. So you have two, you have a juxtaposition of someone's house and someone's field, the Adam's field, and the animal fell off the roof. Rashi says Baones into his neighbor's field, and then he ate up the fruits of his neighbor. How much does he pay? Mashenenes. Why does he pay Mashenenes? Apparently this has nothing to do with Nezikin. It's a new halacha of Hana, that you pay for Hana. It's similar to a case where, let's say, you go down to my field and you plant my field and I didn't even authorize you to do so, and as a result my field has an increment in its value. I have to pay you for that. That's called Hana. Mitch, what are you saying?
Why don't you say that the animal pays for what he ate, whatever it was that he ate, but doesn't have to pay if in falling down he damaged the property, damaged the plants, or something like that.
So again, the Mishnah, let's read the Mishnah one more time. Nafla legina venenes, right? The Mishnah is talking about a case, says, again, I'm using Rashi here, where the animal fell from a high point through no fault of the owner of the animal, that's called ones, but venenes, but it had some sort of benefit. As a result of that benefit, the nizak is in the minus, right? He takes a loss. So you might say, well, let the owner of the tzon pay for that loss. And the answer is, Rashi says, no, he was onus. If he's onus, he's not chayav under the law of nizikin, under the law of liability. But nevertheless, the Mishnah says he has to pay for the hanah, the benefit he has.
Right. The animal did two things. In falling down, he damaged the property, and then he also ate.
Okay, whatever it is. I don't know. I'm not up to that yet, but I'm just pointing out that whatever hanah, whatever benefit the animal gained, that benefit can be evaluated from the perspective of the owner of the animal, and that's what he has to pay. However, yarda kidarka vizika. Now we're talking about a case where there is no what? Ones, but rather is pshia. So the owner of the animal is now guilty of what?
Nikakes.
Guilty of nezikin. Correct? And if he's guilty of nezikin, he has to pay damages. So again, if not for this Mishnah, what would you say? How would you evaluate the amount of compensation he has to give to the nizak?
All of it.
Whatever it's worth on the market. Oh. For some reason, this is the comment that I was making before, but I was jumping the gun, because I spent most of my time on the sugya, on the Gemara itself, is the Mishnah's Machadesh, Mishalemes Mashi Zika, it pays for Nezikin, But how much do you pay for the zikin? Not the amount of money that these fruits or vegetables would be sold for in the market. That would be our intuitive response to someone who was poshe, who was negligent, he didn't watch his animal properly. But no. Ketzad mishalemes mashi zika. Here's another kula. Well, this is actually the kula on the mazik. Shamin. What does shamin mean?
To estimate,
evaluate. Besa. Besa, Rashi says, is an area that's 50 amos square. That's a very, very large area. Be osa soda in that field, because again, in different fields, depending on the productivity of the field, it might be worth different amounts.
50 or 50 by
50? 50 by 50, that's 50 square amos. An amazing amount.
2,500
amos.
Square amos.
That's humongous. Kama isa yofa, v'kama yofa. The animal destroyed fruits. The owner of the animal is a poshea. Let's figure out how much this field of the size of 50 by 50 amos that they saw has been devaluated on the market. He's looking for a buyer to purchase this gigantic area. And there's one row, I'm just giving an example, one row of tomatoes that was destroyed. I'll tell you the truth. It's like the owners of an apartment that I just bought took all the bulbs out of the apartment. They didn't leave us with one bulb. I hope that's not Lashon Hara. I mean, you wouldn't know the owner. They live far away anyway. So, Chutz, they could have left us with one light bulb. You know what I'm saying? I came in, it was pitch black. I needed a flashlight. But ask yourself the following question. Would I have paid more or less for the apartment if there were bulbs, so there weren't any bulbs? See what I'm saying?
Charge $1.50 for the bulbs.
Right. So this is what's called havlah. Havlah means it's like swallowed up in the price. Imagine you have this humongous field, and one aruga, you know, one patch of tomatoes is destroyed. So in truth, when you market the tomatoes, you know, you're going to have to subtract that barrel or that bushel of tomatoes, but that's not going to reflect in any radical way, in any significant way, on the value, the sale value of this field that's 50 amos by 50 amos.
Why does it do that?
So that's the Gemara's going to ask, why are we being so lenient on the mazik? And again, the lumpness of it is, which we're not up to yet, is that the hezek is not defined for some reason. I can't give you the rational reason for it. It's not a hezek on the fruits, but it's a hezek on what?
Property.
On the field, on the property. Reb Shimon Omer, Reb Shimon says that's true, but up until a certain point. And what is that? Achla peros gmurim. I agree with you if the fruits are still nourishing and growing from the ground. Then you could say they're part of the ground, and therefore the hezek is to the ground, to the field. But if they're peros gmurim, and what are they lacking now? Ktsira, right? All you need is a maisa ktsira. And halacha very often defines peros ha'omdim libatzeh kibitzurim dami. It's halacha in peah, in many different areas in halacha. Here in shibudim also, it's already considered talush. Again, I haven't done the maisa of ktsira, but it's as if it's disconnected from the karka. It doesn't gain anything from the karka. Is then mishalem es peros gmurim. Then you pay the market value of peros. Im saw, if it was that volume called a saw, you pay for a saw on the market of those fruits. Im sasayim, you pay the exact value of the fruits.
So Megan says you're probably going to end up paying less in this case.
Less? Chas v'shalom. You're going to pay a lot more. Because again, a saw of peros in the market is a heck of a lot of money. But when you view that saw as part of a base saw, and how much did the property itself, how much was it devaluated, it's such a minute fraction of the value. Because again, this person is buying the field for posterity. You know, it's true that he's going to market the fruits of this year's produce, but that's not why he's buying the field. That's a variable. But in terms of the value of the field, because of one little saw of, you know, a bushel of apples, you know, that's not going to devaluate the field.
If I wanted to keep the logic going, I would say that you should pay less than the value of the fruit because he didn't have to pick the fruit. So you should give him back the cost of picking.
Well, I guess the cost of picking is less than the cost of marketing. Otherwise, you know, farmers in deep trouble.
It seems like it's all consistent. It has the same logic.
Great. Tana Rabbana, we learned in a Braisa. Ezu karoi, v'ezu shalo karoi. The Mishnah says that all you have to do is provide the proper shmira. But tell me, what is the proper shmira? Deles sheyachol lamod beruach mitsuya zeu karoi. If it's a normal velocity wind that we anticipate, we predict, and the fence is such that it could certainly survive the wind, the normal wind, that's called karoi. But what about a fence? She'eina yechola lamod beruach mitsuya. I'm sorry. She'eina yechola lamod beruach mitsuya zeu shelo karoi. But what about a fence that could not withstand the wind of a normal velocity wind? That's called shelo karoi. And that's what the Mishnah says, yechayov. So we'll soon see that this is only one case in point. The important thing is not the delis. You know, we're not going to define shmir in terms of a delis. There are many different ways of and situations of variables in shmira, but there's a concept here that's being conveyed. What is delis shichol lama beruach mitzuyah as an abstract concept?
It's something that can't withstand. It's like a dofen of a sukkah.
No, but I'm saying, if forget about. No, I want to leave out the word deles, the word dolphin. How can you give me an abstract, Yisrael?
Normal circumstances.
Exactly, predictable normal circumstances. Shmira karoi means you've got to take into account predictable normal circumstances. In this case, it happens to be a deles. In another case, it might be a dolphin. But in other cases, it could be a kisui bar. It could be rope. Let's say if the animal wants to get you tied up, the animal wants to break the rope. What is considered normal? What is predictable? If you've covered yourself as far as something which is normal and predictable, that's called shmira karoi. However, let's say, for example, a hurricane wind would come along, and you've only provided the shmira karoi for a ruach mitsuya. And a hurricane, although it's unusual and certainly not well, back in the day, today maybe they predict it, but it's not predictable. Nevertheless, this rope or this delis is not able to contain the animal in the face of a hurricane high velocity wind. The Mishnah says you're potter. And I'm wondering out loud, again, we're going to have to see the sugya, whether the Mishnah is specifically talking about tzon as opposed to a shar. Remember my question, why all of a sudden all the Mishnahs were addressing the case of a shar? Maybe with regard to a shar is a much more belligerent animal, can get angry, and maybe in that case you have to provide a more serious shmira. I don't know. I'm just throwing out an idea. Amar Rav Mani Bar Patish. Rav Mani Bar Patish says the following. Man Tana, who is the author of our Mishnah, and he says Muad. Now, this word Muad is going to give us a lot of headaches here. Okay, but let's just read the line in the Gemara. Muad disagile vishmira pchusa. In other words, shmira, says Rav Mani, for a ruach mitsuya is a low level of shmira. That's called shmir p'chusa. There's a higher level of shmira which should take into account even a ruach she'ena mitsuya. Who is the Tana who would allow the Baal Hamazik to get away with the lower level of shmira, the shmir p'chusa? Not every Tana is necessarily on board. And why? Says Rav Mani Bar Patish, because we're talking about a muad. Now wait a second. The word muad in this context is very difficult, because muad is a word that applies to Karen, not to Shein Veregel. The Torah says with regard to Karen, that im itmol shilshom, if it already has a record of being mazik, then he has to pay full damages. That's called a mu'at. If, on the other hand, it was a shor tam, the Torah says, v'chatzu es kaspo, you only pay half the nezek, that's called a shor tam. The Gemara here uses the word mu'at, in a sense, I would call it a borrowed term. It really belongs to the world of Karen. Technically, the word mu'ad belongs to Karen. But the Gemara says that the concept of mu'ad, conceptually, is not limited to Karen. This is pretty startling Gemara here. I would never have said this, but the Gemara is saying that the word mu'ad is appropriate, is applicable, and you'll see not just the word, it's not just semantics. The Gemara now is going to check out what's the din with regard to a shor mu'ad. And what kind of shmira do I have to provide for a shor mu'ad? And we're going to soon see that Rabbi Meir ups the ante, and with regard to a shor mu'ad, Shmira Pchusa is not sufficient. We're going to require what? Shmira Ma'ula. And therefore, Marmoni Bar Patish is going to tell us that our mission is authored by Rabbi Yehuda, who lowers the bar with regard to a Keren Mu'ad and says that a Keren Mu'ad, all you need is what? Shmira Pchusa. In other words, the premise, the underlying premise of Marmani Bar Patish is an absolute equation between our Mishnah. Our Mishnah deals with what? Shein v'regel and Karen. Why? What is the umbrella rubric, so to speak, that combines Shein v'regel on the one end and Karen on the other? What's the magic word? Mu'ad. Mu'ad. An animal, a mazik, that's mu'ad, which means we can anticipate from the get-go that this is what the animal is going to do. That animal requires shmira. In the case of a shor, the animal becomes mu'ad. In the case of shein v'regel, the animal is mu'ad. Mitchilas b'riyaso, it's mu'ad. And therefore, says Rav Mani Bar Patish, there ain't no difference between the two. The level of shmira that has to be provided for a mu'ad is one and the same. Whether it's the mu'ad as classically shor keren mu'ad, or whether it's the mu'ad of shein v'regel, the exact identical standard of shmir that's required is uniform throughout. And this is a real headache, because it undermines what I thought was the intuitive logic to say that shor mu'ad, as far as Karen is concerned, might require a higher level of shmira. But Rav Mani Bar Patish refuses to accept that position. Disnan, he quotes the Mishnah, Kashru ba'olav b'mosera. The animal was tied up by a rope. V'nal l'fanav karoy. Rashi says, "Oh, nal the fun of karoy," or he locks the animal into a fence. V'yotza v'hizik. So, what kind of shmir did he provide, Rabosai?
Pchusa,
the low level of shmira. Says Rabbi Meir, "Echad tam v'echad muad chayov." With regard to Karen, it matters not whether the animal is a tam, it has no record, or it's a muad, it's got a very serious criminal record, you're always chayav. Why? Because the shmir you provide only reaches the level of what? Shmir b'chusa. With regard to Rabbi Meir, what level of shmir does the Torah demand? In Karen? Whether it's tam or muad? Ma'ula. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, tam chayav, muad patur. Counterintuitive. Says Rabbi Yehuda, this is a Mishnah back on Daf Mem Hey, that with regard to a mu'ad, the Torah has reduced the level of shmira from that of ma'ula down to the low level of p'chusa. The Torah didn't have that compassion on the owner of a shartam. But l'chora, from the fact that both Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda agree that in the case of Shartam, what Shmira does the Torah require? Ma'ula, you see that Shmira in Nezikin really means Shmira Ma'ula. Later on, the Gemara is going to explain why in the case of Mu'ad do we reduce the level of Shmira from that of Ma'ula down to Pchusa. But again, we're going to have to derive that, as you'll soon see in the next line here, from a Pasuk. Shenema, because the Torah says, I'll read the whole Pasuk to you. Oh, no, da ki shar nagachu mitmol shilshom v'lo yishmerenu balav. The Bailim did not provide Shmira. Shalim yishalim. Then he pays. So since the Torah says that he didn't provide Shmira, that's why he's chayav. This is the case of mitmol shilshom of ashar muad. The implication is that he's chayav because he did not provide shmira. What level of shmira did he not provide? The basic level of shmira, shmira pchus. But in the case where he provided the basic level of shmira, shamur huzeh. Says Rabbi Yehuda, the Torah is telling me in the case of Mu'ad, as long as it's not V'lo Yishmerena, like a double negative, you put a negative sign in front of the V'lo Yishmerena and you end up with Shmira, but in this case, the lowest level of Shmira, that's sufficient in the case of Shar Mu'ad. Rabbi Eliezer goes to the other extreme. It's really interesting. You have, with regard to a Shar Mu'ad, you have Rabbi Yehuda on the lenient polar extreme. You have now Rabbi Eliezer on the harsh polar extreme with Rabbi Meir in the middle. Says Rabbi Eliezer, ein lo shmira ela sakin. Forget about shmira. Don't even dream about shmira. Lock it up with 50 locks. Tie its body with the most powerful rope in the world. I don't even care if you inject something into its brain and put it to sleep for the time being. I don't know. Maybe I went too far here, but ein lo shmira ela besakin. If you haven't learned the laws of shechita, it's a good time to learn it, because what you're going to do in Yishar Mu'ad, says Rabbi Lazar, is what? Is shechtit. That's all you can do. So we have Rabbi Eliezer on one extreme. There ain't no such thing as Shmira with regard to Yishar Mu'ad. We've got Rabbi Yehuda on the other extreme. V'lo yishmeru ha-shamru zeh, that even Shmira p'chusa is sufficient for a Yishar Mu'ad. And in the middle, we have what I call the intuitively logical or attractive position, Rabbi Meir, that a Mu'ad requires Shmira Ma'ula. For that matter, according to Rabbi Meir, even what? Even a Tam requires Shmira Ma'ula. But you don't have to put it to sleep. You'll be potter if you provide a Shmira Ma'ul. Says Rav Mani Bar Patish. Let's go back to Rav Mani Bar Patish. Our Mishnah must be authored by Rabbi Yehuda, because our Mishnah is talking about a Mu'ad. Again, not a Shar Mu'ad. We're not talking about Keren. But we're talking about Mu'ad. The animal is Mu'ad. The animal is, by its very nature, destructive. Not destructive in the sense of belligerent destruction, but destructive in the sense that you give an animal food, you expose it to fruits or vegetables, it's going to eat. You take the animal for a walk, and the animal is going to pound whatever fruits and vegetables are in its way. And in that sense, we have here a mu'ad, and it's no different than a shar mu'ad, which according to Rabbi Meir requires Shmira Ma'ula. How does the Mishnah then get away with Ruach Mitzuya, and that provision of Shmira is enough? The answer is because our Mishnah is authored by whom? By Rabbi Yehuda. What does Rabbi Yehuda say about a Shar Mu'ad? Sagile b'Shmira Pchusa. Says the Gemara, nay, I don't agree with Rav Mani Bar Patish. Afilu Tema Rabbi Meir. You don't have to assume that the word mu'ad can be borrowed from Karen and applied to Shein V'Regel. No. Shani Shein V'Regel da Torah mi'ata b'shmirasan. In the cases of Shein and Regel, the Torah lowered the level of Shmira. Again, it's interesting, the language of the Gemara, HaTorah mi'ata b'shmirasan. I'm going to have to ask how we know such a thing, but it's a chiddush the Torah went out of its way to lower the standards of Shmira that's required for Shein V'Regel. Even though, again, Shein V'Regel is a kind of a hezek that's natural, that's absolutely predictable. In that sense, it's like, it overlaps with Muad in the case of Keren. But nevertheless, we're not going to establish or accept any analogy between Keren and Shein V'Regel. Diyamar Rab Lazar V'Amri Lei B'Masnisa Tana Arba Dvarim HaTorah Mi'ata B'Shmirasan. There are four cases of Hezek, of Mazikim, where the Torah went out of its way to teach us that a lower level of Shmira is sufficient. The Eluhain Bar, the Eish, Shein, V'Regel. What's not on the list? Keren is not on the list. Because in the case of Keren, according to Rabbi Meir, both in Tam and in Muad, the Torah requires a higher level of Shmira. In the case of Keren, according to Rabbi Yehuda, if it's a Tam, the Torah required a higher level of Shmira. In the case of a Muad, according to Rabbi Eliezer, it doesn't even have Shmira. So we can leave Keren out of this list, because Keren, according to all Tanoim, again, Markin Islay will require a higher level of Shmira. But in Bar, Eish, Shein, V'Regel, the Torah, Mi'atah, the Torah actively lowered the standard, the requirement of Shmira. Another case of what we saw before as a precedent, Mishalemes, Mashi, Yizika, Ketzad, Shomin, Beisov, that we are lenient on the Mazik. And again, I don't know why we're being so lenient on the Mazik. What else is omitted from this list besides Keren? Anybody? Adav HaMazik is left out. A person has to provide the highest level of Shmira possible. Because Adam Mu'ud Li'olam Bein Er Bein Yoshev. A man turns over in his sleep and breaks Kalim, he's Chayev. Again, there are differences. If somebody brought the Kalim after he was asleep, that's his responsibility. But assuming that I went to sleep and within a certain proximity, a certain radius, there are Kalim. If I roll over my sleep without any intention to damage, I'm Chayev for that. There's no Torah Mi'atah B'Shmirasa with regard to Adam HaMazik. There's no Torah Mi'atah B'Shmirasa with regard to Keren. Bar, how do we know this? Dechsiv, the Torah says, Ki Yiftach Ish Bar, O Ki Yichre Ish Bar V'lo Yichasena. The Torah says that you dug a bar, or you found a bar that was covered, and you exposed the covering, then you're Chayav. Hakiso Patur, if you cover the bar, you are Patur. How do you know you're Patur for Shmira Pchusa? Maybe you have to provide Shmira Ma'ula. So I have a note here from the Shita Mekubetzes. He says that the Torah should have said Velo Yechaser. That would have been sufficient. What's Velo Yechasenu? Velo Yechasenu is a mute to tell me that any kisui is sufficient. What does it mean, any kisui? Again, in conceptual terms, ruach mitsuya. Again, ruach mitsuya in conceptual terms. I'm not talking about the wind blowing off the cover of the thing. But if you know, for example, that very heavy animals are going to break this kisui, or termites are going to attack the wood of this kisui, you know, that's something that's predictable. That's not shmir at all. But as long as you can cover yourself from those kinds of foreseeable or predictable occasions that might destroy your kisui, then you're okay. You've got a kisui kosher, who we'll call it. And that's called Shmir Pchusa. In the case of Eish, Dichsiv, the Torah says, Shalem, Yeshalem, Amavir, Es HaBeir, when are you chayev, or why are you chayev, says the Torah. After all, I lit a fire here, the wind carried the fire there, and it burnt up somebody's haystack. Why am I chayev? So what's the Torah's answer? Rabosai, what's stated in the Torah? I'm asking you to explain a pasuk in Chumash. Can you help me with that? No, but why do you pay? The Torah tells you why you pay.
Mitzuya.
What's the key word, Mitch? Mavir. You're a mavir. Mavir means you are considered as it, with the halacha considers as if you lit up his haystack. It's not that the way we understood it, well, you know what, I lit a fire here, and now it was carried by the wind, and I'm responsible for that, I didn't do Shmira, forget about all that. The Torah says you're chai because it's as if you burnt down his Be'era. Says the Gemara, Adi Ovid Ke'ein Mavir, until it could be considered, Yechayev, until at the point at which it could be considered as if you were the Mavir. And when or what kind of Shmira would be Mafkia, would remove from you the status of being Ke'ein Mavir? Shmira Pchusus. As long as you provided the basic level of Shmira, meaning a normal velocity wind, then we can't call you Kain Mavir. If the hurricane comes and carries the fire, that's not Kain Mavir. That, at that point, we crossed over the boundaries, beyond the red line. We can't call you a Mavir. When can we call you a Mavir? That's if you didn't provide any Shmira. Zilch, Zippo, not even the lowest level of Shmira Pchusa. But once you provide, that's total Pshir. But once you provide some level of Shmir, which we call Shmir Pekusa for a normal velocity predictable wind, then you're not Kain Mavir, then you're not Chayav. Says the Gemara, the same thing applies to Shane. Because Midich Siv, what does the Torah say? I'll read the whole Pasuk. Ki Yaver Ish Sodeh. Later on, the Gemara is going to say that Ki Yaver is a reference to Shane. The Gemara is going to prove that. Vishilach es beira, which means he sent out his animal. Ubir b'steyachna, and the animal ate in someone else's pastoral land. Then Yochayev, the Torah says, Adi ovid ke'en ubir. Ubir means you send the animal out. Again, that's not what he did. He didn't provide shmira. But the Torah says if you didn't provide shmira, it's as if you sent the animal out. What would remove that description of you're sending the animal out? Shmir Pchusa, the lowest level of Shmir. Regel, Vesiv, Veshilach, Es Be'iro. You sent out the animal. Right? The first part of the Pasuk is Uvir, and the second part of the Pasuk is Veshilach. Correct? It says, Ki Yaver, and that means Adiyovit Kein Ubir, and then it says Vishilach, which is a reference to Regel. The Gemara is going to derive that from Sukkim. Adiyovit Kein Vishilach. It's as if you actually led the animal into someone else's pasture, and he stomps on the peros, and he destroys them. When is it considered as if you did the Hezek? That's only when you didn't provide any Shmira whatsoever, but if you provided some Shmira, albeit the minimum Shmira for that which is predictable, namely Shmira Pchusa, then it's not Ke'en Veshilach, and therefore you're Patur. So we have four Psukim here. We have Bar, we have Eish, we have Shein, and we have Regel. And in all these four Psukim, we are establishing that you're only Chayev when it's as if you did the action of Hezek, albeit through your animal, right? And you didn't provide any Shmira whatsoever. So Rabosai, in truth, this Gemara, I believe, will answer a very, very famous Chakira. In the yeshiva world, this is the most fundamental Chakira in Mamana Masik, in the Zikin, in the entire Masechta Bava Kama. I think the answer lies right here in our sugya and Hayam and Beis. Yesh Lachkar. When the Torah says I have to pay and compensate the Nizak, the Masik has to pay damages. Why is that so? Is the Torah saying that it's as if I did the action, I did the Hezek? Or is the Torah saying, no, I'm responsible, not because I did the action, but because my mamon did the action? Is it the Maisa Hezek of the Bailim? Again, even though there is no Maisa Hezek, the Bailim were completely passive, but the Torah upgrades you, so to speak, or the Torah is very harsh with you, and the Torah says, you know what, if you didn't provide Shmir, it's as if you did the action yourself. Vicariously, you acted through your shar. Or no, then there's no such halacha. It's not that you did the action. The animal did the action. You were passive. You're sitting in your, you know, you're resting in your hammock in your backyard. But rather, you didn't do shmirah. If you didn't do shmirah, the Torah says for that shia, that you didn't provide shmirah, you're chayav. That's the famous chakira in yeshivas. For example, there's something called kofar. What's kofar? If my, I don't want to say mine, but let's say Ruvain's shahr kills the human being. Again, this only applies if the shahr has a record, it's a mu'ud, but. So the owner of the shahr, the Torah says, should be killed. So I state in Pasuk, I didn't write the script. It says, Ubal ha-shahr yumos. The gambol of yumos. And then what does it say, Yisrael? Im kofer yushasol. So what happens over here? The Torah, in the same breath, so to speak, don't take me literally, contradicts itself. Because in one breath the Torah says, Baal Yumos, the owner of the shahr should die. If the owner of the shahr should die, what does that mean? He's the killer. It's not the shahr that killed. It's the owner of the shahr that killed. Then the Torah says, well, alright, you know what? Im kofer yushasol. What do you mean? The Torah itself says, elsewhere, Vayikra, it says, Lo tikhu kofer l'nefesh rotzeach. The Torah itself says we're not allowed to take a kofer. Imagine a guy kills someone, and he offers Bezdin, for the benefit of the community, $15 billion as a gift, on the condition that you let me off the hook. It's a separate law in the Torah's count of the minyan of mitzvahs, Lo tikhu kofer l'nefesh rotzeach. And here the Torah says, you're a rotzeach, gambol of yumas. And then it says in kofer yushasov, we're willing to accept bakshish, as the Arabs call it, right? The Israelis use that term. We'll take kofer. How could it be? And we paskin that that kofer is the value of the mazik himself, of the owner of the shahr. He's got to redeem himself. The Torah says, look, you're a rotzeach, basically. You should be put to death. But the Torah says, in this case, we're going to make an exception. We're going to accept the kofar. That kofar, once it's paid, removes from you the chiyuv misa as a rotzeach. It's a replacement. I can't explain it, but that's what the Torah says. Is that means, at least in this case, within the entire constellation of Dinei Nezikin, the Torah says that what your shahr did, gam ba'al of yumas, the misa shahr relates to you. Or no? That's a separate halacha in Shar Shehemis Adam, and it doesn't apply in Ezekiel in general. In Ezekiel in general, the Torah says, you know what, you're holding on to a mazik, you have to foresee that the mazik is going to damage, it's your responsibility to watch. If you don't watch, if you don't guard, if there's no shmira, you're chayv. It's separate chiyuv. It's more than a mazik. It's not that you did the hezek. What do we see here in our sugya? I don't know why in the yeshiva world they don't quote our sugya. Our sugya, I think, would be proof positive. Why does the Torah say yechayev when the fire goes out and burns? Why does the Torah say yechayev for Shane and for Regel? Because of your action. The Torah says it's your action.
Or lack of action.
No, that's what I'm saying. Read the pasuk on both sides. It's not fair when you reinterpret a pasuk here. In this, you know, I also like to reinterpret pasukim, but in this case, that's foul play. Because here the Gemara is building its case on a literal reading of the pasuk. The Torah says, ki, well, what's the pasuk? Hamavir es habeiro. Hamavir es habeiro. Adi ovid kein mavir. Mavir means that we consider it, it's an upgrade, or you can call it a downgrade, whichever way you look at it, but the Torah is upgrading it as if you did the Mavir. Now I ask you the following question. If a person provides Shmira, why is he potter for Nezik? And there are two different answers. One answer is to say, well, it's not as if I did the action. You can't tell me I did the action vicariously through my shahr or through my eish in a case where I provided shmira. That's not my action. The other way of saying it is, you know why I'm potter? Because there's no reason for me to chayev. The reason I'm chayev is because I have to provide shmira And the answer is, but I provided Shmi. What's the nafkamina? My nafkamina, whether I say that you're chayev because it's your action, or whether you're chayev because you were posheya in Shmira. You did not provide adequate Shmira.
It seems to me that the example that was given.
Which Rashi? Okay, we'll come back to the top Rashi in just a minute. But I was hoping and I was praying, but I guess I failed.
By the listing or whatever the.
Forget about listing, that you would give me the following answer. But since you didn't give it, I'm going to give it. The nafkamina is Shmir Pchusa versus Shmir Ma'ula. If the Torah is Machayev me because it's my action, then once I provided Shmira, no way, no how can you say it's my action? And therefore even Shmir Pchusa would be sufficient. But if the Torah is Machayev me because I didn't provide Shmira, then I could suggest the following. The Torah provide or requires of you, obligates you to provide Shmira. What kind of Shmira? The best kind of Shmira that's available. Is Mamela what Rashi says, I think Rabbi Sachtowitz is saying, go back to the first Rashi. Rashi says, my Havili Lemevad, Rashi says that you are chayev vicariously through the act of your shor because you have a mazik here and you didn't provide any Shmira for that mazik. It's as if you did the action. Rashi says, my Havili Lemevad. Of course he could have provided a much better Shmira. Why is he only worried about a Ruach Mitzuya? He should have been worried even about a Ruach Sheda Mitzuya. He didn't take into account of a high velocity wind. The answer is, he doesn't have to take that into account. All he has to do is be mafkia. He has to remove from himself the status of a quasi Adam Amazik, of Gamba Olav Yumas, of Adshiyasa Ke'en Ubir, Adiyovid Ke'en Ubir. Once he provides that, that's enough. And Rabosai, now let's go back for a moment to Tosus. Tosus says, "Ein lo litroach yosa." At the end of Tosus, "Di ramaskil nifritza." Tosus says that if the animal got out at night, he doesn't have to do tircha. What do you mean he doesn't have to do tircha? He's got an animal running through the streets, and he knows about it, according to the second teretz of Tosus. He's not obligated to get out of his pajamas, wear his clothes, get a flashlight or a torch and start running through the streets. That's a halacha ready in Shmira. That has nothing to do with the Shem Mazik per se. You see, if the Torah says that you are chayav for the action of your animal, it means that the animal is a mazik. And now, as I call it vicariously, that Maisa Hezek relates to you, then I don't think we can say Tircha. What do you mean Tircha? You're the owner, you're the proud owner of a mazik. There's a shara out there that's going loose. You've got to provide Shmir. In the case of Bar, HaTorah Miyata B'Shmirasan. What does it mean, HaTorah Miyata B'Shmirasan? The Torah says that, you know what, from the perspective of Shmira, we're going to let you get away with a low level of Shmira. Tosa says, you know what, if there's a tircha yisera, if it's very difficult for you to provide Shmira, we can't demand of you X, Y, and Z in order to get up in the middle of the night to provide Shmira and run after the animal, that's a ptur in Shmira. But it's not going to be enough to be mafkia the Shem Mazik and to say that you are not responsible for the action of the animal. If there's a halacha that the Torah says you have to provide shmir, because if you don't, you're responsible for this mazik that's loose out there in the streets, then forget about tircha. Tircha is not going to help. And therefore, Rabosai Tosus in his first teretz says, you know what's nifritz of a laila? You don't know about it. As soon as you know about it, says Tosus, you are chayav to get out of your pajamas and go there and find the animal. Why? Because otherwise, it's adi ovid ki ein ubir. You're in possession of a mazik, and you must somehow remove that mazik. The Torah is mamayit b'shmira, because the Torah says once you do the basic level of shmira, shmir p'chusa, you are no longer considered the asiyas, the oses ha-maisa. It's not the asiyas ha-maisa. Where are we up to, Rabosa?
Rebbe?
Yeah?
It seems to me that that's also quarry from the din of listing, because why shouldn't the listing have been responsible when they were responsible for this animal getting out and now causing a hezek? But the fact is that has nothing to do with anything. The fact is
it's not their animal.
It's not only that's not their animal. The only thing they did, because of their illegal action, is they did something to the Baal of the behemoth. The Baal of the behemoth is potter because he did the proper shmira.
Right.
And they represent a ruach eina mitzuya. So he would be potter. So therefore, even the fact that his behemoth did something, he is not responsible for anything. So they haven't caused him any hazard. And then that's the end of the story. It's the end of the story because they haven't.
Okay, I think the easiest way of explaining listim is that the Torah says it's as if you did the hezek. Right. That's only if you own the what's machayev? What generates this halacha that you did the hezek? The answer is you are responsible for this hezek because it's yours. That's called mamon hamazik. Right. In the case of the listim, you can't call it mamon hamazik until when. Hotziu listed.
Right. That's the point.
Okay, Groma, we have to know, whether he's chayav din shamayim, but that's going to be the next Gemara. I don't know. If we have a few more minutes, maybe we'll get to that. Visanya, we learned in a brisa. Vishilach, zeharegel. How do we know that the word vishilach is a reference to regel? V'cheinu omer, pasuk Yishayahu ha-Novi, ashreichem zorei al kol mayim, mishalchei regel hashor v'chamor. So we see that the word shiluach refers to regel. Ubir zeh ha-shein. How do we know that ubir is a reference to shein? V'cheinu omer, pasuk Yimalachim. What does it say in Malachim? It says, this is the case of Achia, who tells about the ultimate death of Yeravam Melch Yisrael, who was a Chote Umachti. It says there would be Arti Achrei Beis Yeravam Kasher Yevair HaGol Atumo. And Yevair HaGol Atumo, Rashi says that the Golol is the teeth, and the teeth are eating something until it's totally consumed. So you see that the word Yevair is a reference to Shane. Says the Gemara, Taima Diovit Kein Veshilach Ubir Hololo Ovid Lo. If he didn't do Kein Veshilach Ubir, then Lo, he's not Chayav, and therefore our Mishnah can be understood even according to Rabbi Meir, even though Rabbi Meir holds in the case of Shara Muad, you need a higher level of Shmira Ma'ula. Nevertheless, Rabbi Meir would agree in these four cases of Bar, A, Shein, Regel, all you need to provide is the Shmir P'chusa, because otherwise it's not Ki Ein V'Shilach Ki Ein Ubir. Omar Rabba Masnisa Nami Deka, I can be Medayik in the Lashon of the Mishnah, the K'tani Tzon Michti, let's look B'Shar Kaskin of Yossi. In all the Mishnais that we had until this point on Daf Mem Vav, on Daf Lamed Vav, it always uses Shar. Why did the Mishnah shift all of a sudden to so Nisnei Shor? Maishna the Ketani Tzon. It must be, says the Gemara, Lav Mishum Da Torah Miyata Bishmirasa, because Tzon is not something that normally goes out belligerently to destroy, to damage. It's not Keren, but rather it's Shein or Regel. Lav Mishum De Kan Keren Lok Siva Bey. Again, the word kani is very problematic here, but mishum de karen lo ksiva be, because when the Torah refers to karen, it doesn't refer to tzon, and therefore kamashbol, the Mishnah wants to tell us that in the cases of deshein v'regel demu adam hu, and therefore it's enough to provide shmir p'chusa, but in the case of shar, you're going to karen, you're going to require shmir ma'ula, meaning in a Shar Muad, you require Shmir Ma'ula. This is against Rabbi Yehudu, who says that in a Karen Muad, all you need is Shmir Ha'Pchusa. Shmami no the Tan of the Mishnah is against Rabbi Yehuda, but reflects the Shita Rabbi Meir, that had it been Shar and Karen, you'd be chayav because you didn't provide Shmira Ma'ula, but in the cases of Tzon, of Shein V'Regel, all you need is Shmira P'chusa. And here we come to Rabbi Sachnikus's point here about the listim and whether they should be chayav at least Midin Shamayim. Tanya, we learned in a braisa, Omer Rabbi Yeshua Arbod, Varma Osel Sampot Midini Adam, V'chayav Midin Shamayim. The Eluhen, Haporeitz Goder Bifnei Behemas Chavero. He doesn't even mention listim. The reason why the Mishnah mentions listim, it didn't have to be listim. It could be anyone off the street broke this fence. The reason he mentions listim is because he wants to be mechadish to you that a listim, if they take the animal out, they become chay of the dine adam, because they become the bailim through kinyon zela over the animal. But anyone who breaks down the shmira, the fence, that protects the mazik, and as a result the animal goes out, runs, and damages, he is chay midin shamayim. So that's your case of listim, without hotziyur. Then we have another case. Ve'akofef es kamaso, kamaso shel chaver b'fnei hadleika. He takes someone's haystack or a piece of wheat or barley, whatever it is, a kernel, and he bends it towards the fire. The Gemara is going to ask, why isn't he chayav for that? I mean, he's causing the burning down of this koma. Number three, asocher edei sheker lahoyit. This is what they say, mafioso style. You know, he pays off false witnesses to plagiarize themselves. A person knows edus and he refuses to give the edus. So these are four cases, and the Gemara is going to list other cases where he's chayav b'din shamayim. Omar Mara poreitz God b'fnei behemas chaver. Wait a minute, he should be chayav b'din adam at least on the God there. I mean, he broke down the fence. The fence is worth something. Hechi dummy, ilema bekosel bari. If it was a healthy wall and therefore you, it has a market value, b'dini adam nami nechayav. He should have to pay for adam amazik for destroying this kosel. Ella says the Gemara here on Nvav Amin Aleph, the kosel ra'ua. In other words, this kosel had to be broken down anyway. Maybe it was a danger. And therefore, he's not chayav for the kosel, but he's chayav for the removal of the... That's only b'din shamayim. He's chayav on the removal of the protection of the shmir of the bailim vis-a-vis the tzon. Omar Mara, kofif kamos shel chaver fnei adleika, hechi dami, ilam edematile. If he actually takes the kernel and he bends it, beruach mitsuya, in other words, in such a way that as the wind is blowing and it's a normal velocity wind or anticipating this wind, it's going to burn down, is bedini adam naminachav. If I take your stalk, your wheat, and I put it in a place where now it's going to burn down, I'm chayav for that. In other words, it doesn't matter whether I light the fire, and therefore the fire is going to be brought to the object that's damaged, or I move the object that's damaged in the wake of the fire. What's the word I want to use? In the root of what? What's the word?
Path
of the fire. Ela, but rather dematya beruach sheina mitsuya. Ravashi is not going to like this, but the Gemara says that if you bend or move someone's object in such a way that now the fire is going to burn it, if it's carried by an unusual, we'll call it a rare high velocity wind, then although you're not chayev bedini adam, but nevertheless you're chayev bedini shamayim. Ravashi Omar, Tomun Itmar. Oh, this is a brilliant chah. It could be that Ravashi holds that in the case of Ruach Shein Mitsuya, I don't know, maybe Ruach Shein Mitsuya, according to Ravashi, you're not even chayev bedin shamayim, and that has to be studied, that has to be taken under advisement. But Ravashi says, what's the case of Kofev Komosa Shal Chaver B'fnei Adleika? The fire is coming to burn down the haystack. The owner of the haystack has recourse. That's the word. He has recourse to collect damages. From whom? From the Bala Esh, correct? But what did this guy jump in and do? Tamun Itmar. He covers and conceals the haystack. As a result, when the haystack goes up in flame, mishum deshaviyat tomun ve'esh, the owner of the fire is no longer responsible and liable to pay damages because there's a p'tur of esh called tomun. So you went ahead and set up a p'tur of tomun. Again, you did nothing directly to cause the burning of the haystack, but as a result of making it to tomun, you created a p'tur that the mavir who lit the fire no longer has to pay damages. So you've caused indirectly a loss of the value of the kama. Omar Mara Socher Eidei Sheker. Hey, Dami, what's the case of Eidei Sheker? Ilema Linafshe. If he paid off witnesses to testify on his own behalf, Linafshe. So that means he's walking around with $1 million, which belonged to someone else. Is Mamona Boy Shlume? He certainly has to return that money. Ubedini Adam Nami Nechayev. If we can prove, or by his own admission, let's say, or the Eidim turn out to be Zobim, whatever the case may be, that this was a perjury, then he should have to dig into his pocket, and Beis Din will be mechayvim to pay. Elo lechavre, he was very altruistic. Again, I don't know if he was divvying up the profits. I don't know, but he hired Eidim to testify on behalf of his friend. So Shimon is paying the Eidim for Reuven. Reuven gets the money. In such a case, the nitba, right, the person who paid the money out of pocket falsely, can be tovea, the one who hired these eidim, but only b'din shamayim. That's not a direct hezek. Vayodea eidus lechaveru v'yeno meidlo. A person knows testimony that, let's say, Reuven owes Shimon a hundred, and he refuses to give that testimony. So the Gemara says, but my kaskinon, what's the case? Ilema bibetrei, if he's together with another witness and they both decide, you know what, it's not worth our while to go to court and testify. Is pshita, then for sure. Okay, here we're going to have a machlokas rishonim what pshita means. But let's go according to those rishonim who say that pshita means bidei shamayim. That he's certainly chayav bidin shamayim, do'oraisa, who he's violating an isa do'oraisa. The Torah says at the beginning of Vayikra, who aid o ra, o yada, im lo yagid v'nosa avono, he knows, and he has testimony, and he refuses to testify. It's not like in certain countries, you know, mind your own business, you know, there's no way I can force a person to come forward and give testimony. No. In halacha, if he violates this isur, he is responsible. And any loss that's incurred by the person who could have had his eidus and didn't have his eidus is collectible at least b'din shamayim. Ela b'chad, but rather he is the only one who testify, who could possibly testify on behalf of Reuven, that Reuven has a claim against Shimon. Now, if he would have come to testify, what would have been the significance of that testimony? Is only Machayev Shvua. So the question is, would the Nitva in such a case have been willing to back down on his counterclaim, on his defense, rather than take a false oath? So we don't know really what the defendant would have done in such a case. But let's assume, just for a moment, just l'saber et ha'ozen, that the defendant would rather admit and confess and pay than to take a false oath. So as a result of the fact that this one witness did not testify, and therefore the tovea, the plaintiff, could not demand a shvua from the defendant, as a result, the plaintiff lost his money because he had no claim. He didn't have even one single witness to bear evidence on his behalf and support his claim, and therefore he loses the case outright. Had this witness come to testify in Beis Din, at least he may have had a chance to get the money. Why? Because the eid is mechayev shvua, and the nitva wouldn't want to take the shvua, and therefore he's chayev b'din shamayim. What does it mean he's chayev b'din shamayim? I mean, God knows whether or not the nitva would have admitted and confessed. I don't know. This is a funny kind of halacha of chayev b'din shamayim. Chayev b'din shamayim is an absolute unconditional chiyuv. Here I would say, you know, in the divine perspective, either he did cause Reuven a loss, the tovea loss, or he didn't. Maybe that's what it means when it says chayv b'din shamayim. It's a little bit of a twist. It's an unusual kind of chiyuv b'din shamayim. So tomorrow, Rabbo said, again, I can't expect you to be here for Shia tomorrow, but anyone who's with me tomorrow, we're going to continue Bli Neder with this sugya. I'll make it my business that on Wednesday we'll start a new sugya, so you won't feel... But I can't stop in the middle of a sugya, and I apologize for that. It's just, that's part of the experiment, and if that doesn't work, it doesn't work. And it'll either stand or fall on that. But just to try to tempt anyone who might have some free time tomorrow, the next piece of Gemara, which is fascinating, is going to give a whole long list of cases which for some reason were omitted from this Masnisa of Rabbi Yeshua, who says that there are four cases where Yechai B'din Shomayim, and in truth there are a whole slew of cases where Yechai B'din Shomayim. And for some reason, Rabbi Yehoshua omitted them from his brice, and the Gemara is going to rack its brains to try to figure out why these cases were omitted. And that sugya continues until Daf Nun Vav Omid Beis. And hopefully, when we get together on Yom Revi'i, we'll probably be holding here at the beginning, the top of Daf Nun Zayin Amud Aleph. And that's the question of Chazorah. At what point is the Shomer Potur, because he achieved his Chazorah, he returned the object to its rightful owner? Is it enough that he leaves it on his doorstep, or he has to knock on his door and tell him here it is? That's going to be the sugya then. Bli Neder tomorrow, what I'd like to do is cover the Meiri sheet. The Meiri has a very radical sheet about what Chayav B'din Shamayim, what it means. Okay then, Rabbosai, we'll stop here.